You're listening to Star Wars Beyond the Films, the official expanded universe podcast of StarWarsReport.com.
There is a great disturbance in the Force.
You're listening to episode 14 of Star Wars Beyond the Films, your Star Wars discussion podcast. Here at Star Wars Beyond the Films, we ask the tough questions. Questions that have bothered you a long time, or simple ones that have perplexed you off and on. You ponder about Star Wars, and so do we. This episode, it can be found airing on Middle Earth Network Radio, as well as the Star Wars Report website and our Facebook page. I'm one of your hosts, the defender of the EU, Mark Herleman, and with me, like a bad case of rack fever, the EU guru himself, Nathan P. Butler!
Ah, finally something that sounds appropriate. He's with you like a bad disease. You just can't get rid of him. You know, turn into a rape ghoul one of these days.
We can't shake him, kid. We can't shake him.
Precisely.
That's right, Whistler. Shut up now.
Now, for those of you who caught that reference there to our Facebook page, before we begin with our topic, we want to get into something that hopefully will make it easier for you to connect with us. You already know that you can connect with us on Twitter at SWBeyondFilms. There's no the, and SW is a shortening of Star Wars, of course. Well, that is now also the way you can find us on Facebook. You can just search Star Wars Beyond the Films, but Facebook is now allowing these sort of shorter URLs to make it easier for people to find pages now that they've got this whole timeline thing going on and whatnot over there. So you can find us on Facebook at the same, facebook.com/SWBeyondFilms. You can also find my Star Wars Timeline Gold, facebook.com/SWTimelineGold, or StarWarsFanWorks.com, facebook.com/SWFanWorks, and I've just started up an author page because Greater Good will be out very soon as a newly published professional novel that you can find at facebook.com/NathanPButlerAuthor, all as one long kind of strung together word there. Makes it hopefully a lot easier to find stuff because I know Mark and I have been talking about making this easy to find, and there just wasn't an easy way to do it with Facebook until now. But finally, the Facebook gods have given us something a little more useful.
They're shining the light on us. And, you know, there seems to be a lot of light shining this month. I recently just had a daughter, Jaina Sophia. She was born on March 18th. She just missed St. Patrick's Day by a few hours. 7 pounds, 7 ounces, 19 and a quarter inches long. The Sword of the Jedi is here. So we are really excited about that. It's kind of caused some shifting of my studio. I find myself booted out of there more often than not. Whistler, he's kind of hanging in it. He likes her. He thinks she's pretty, so he's willing to make the move.
I do want to ask you. I know Jaina, of course, is a reference to Jaina Solo. But is Sophia a reference to something? I've heard people say maybe Sophia Coppola, who played a role within Star Wars, or maybe Sophia from The Walking Dead, who is a major child character. Was there a purposeful reference for Sophia, or was it just it sounded cool?
It sounded cool. Okay. You know, I was just kicking different names out there. It was really close to being Jaina Tahiri, Jaina Danny, Jaina Madison was on the shelf. But I kept goofing around with Mario. It's Jaina Sophia. And something about that just clicked with my wife. And we waited. We didn't want to actually pick the middle name until we met her. And so once we met her, it just seemed to fit.
Nice. So now she's going to grow up to marry a fat Italian plumber with a big mustache who can't speak clearly. Wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful.
Yes, hopefully he gets lots of copyright money or something. I don't know.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I believe you also had a little bit of good news to share.
That's right. As of the weekend that we are recording this, which is, I guess, the second to last weekend of March, as of Friday, March 23rd, Jody, my girlfriend, and I are now engaged, so we don't know when the wedding itself is actually going to happen, but I guess I should start calling her my fiancé instead of my girlfriend now.
Ah, congratulations, sir. Also, a congratulations goes out to Aaron Goins of the Star Wars Report. Also, you can hear him here on our podcast on occasion. He's one of our stable of hosts that we have. He also had a little boy. I'm not sure if he's picked the name yet. You can follow him on Twitter at Aaron or at A Goins. I believe it's A Goins. I'll have to check that out and put a link in our show notes for you guys because off the top of my head, I don't know, and my computer's not going to be able to get me there. But congratulations, bud, and awesome on the little boy. It's awesome to have a new life coming in all around us.
Very true. Very true. And, you know, by the time this episode finally airs, you better have picked a name, my friend, because that'd be a little creepy.
I'm rooting for Jason. Jaina needs a Jason. That's all I'm saying.
There you go. As long as it's not... Well, I mean, you could bring the two sides of fandom together. Maybe he should name the boy Jag or Jagged. Although the crap he'd get in school would be pretty bad, probably.
That would be tough.
All right, Mark, so what's our topic this time around?
Our topic this time around is, are we done cramming now? We're going to look at certain time points. And if there's too much going on, I mean, basically, Han... Here's a good example. Do we need more Han and Chewie stories? Do we need more Luke stories set right after Yavin 4? You know, if adding one more causes a continuity error just in the amount of tales we have to this date, is it a problem? Is it push us kind of towards a reboot in a sense? If we have so many stories that they couldn't possibly fit, but we're still shoehorning them in, is this going to be a problem or is this something we can accept as Star Wars fans? All that and more on this week's episode of Star Wars Beyond the Films.
That's right, and this, of course, does tie into a very recent announcement. Again, recent as of the time we're recording this, a couple weeks ago, as of the time you're hearing this, which is that Del Rey made this big deal about this special upcoming announcement. It's a big announcement. Turns out to be something that was actually revealed on sites like Pete Morrison's Lightsaber Rattling a few days before, and at Knight's Archive a few days before. But they are now putting out a new Timothy Zahn novel. Yes, a new Timothy Zahn novel entitled Scoundrels, which is going to be essentially an Ocean's 11-type caper. We've got Han and Chewie. They're trying to get money to pay back Jabba the Hutt again. And they're going to be, at some point, it seems like, based on the cover and based on some of the text they've given us, they're going to be encountering Lando Calrissian, which may be yet another last time running into Lando to tick him off before the events of The Empire Strikes Back, where he says, you know, you got a lot of guts coming here after what you've pulled. So it's sort of in keeping with a very recent bit of news, because it has gotten people somewhat concerned about, wow, another immediately post-Yavin story with Han and Chewie, another time of them dealing with the money for Jabba, and yet another time dealing with Lando in some form before Empire. So it is a very timely topic here, but one we've been thinking about really since the beginning of the show. Mark, this was one of the ones you first suggested when we started thinking about the show, right?
That's true. You know, and I think of Rebel Force. You know, that series kind of was put right on top of other stories that were going down. And, you know, I got to the end of one of the books, and they make it seem like Luke dies. But then they go right before the book ends, and they tell you, oh, Luke's okay. And I was thinking to myself, I'm like, okay, I know Luke doesn't die. But that was a missed opportunity. They had a really good chance to make the reader think, oh my gosh, they just host something up big time. Luke can't die. And then they could have picked up in the next book and told you, no, he didn't die. But they didn't go that route. And, you know, we got like Death Troopers, where at the end of that, Han doesn't have the Millennium Falcon. We're like, well, what's going to go on there? I mean, we're like, you know, days or months or, you know, who knows, away from A New Hope. And yet he still don't have it. And then, you know, we got just all these different tales that are just so on top of each other that it does get a little confusing at times when you're trying to follow it from a dating perspective as to which goes before the other. And that's always been something that I ponder a lot. And I use the word ponder because I'm always thinking about stuff. And to me, it's pondering because I can get into it. I can rant, I can rave. But at the end of the day, it's all Star Wars. It's all fun. So I really don't care that much. I mean, it's not like the end of my world that two stories collide. I will find a way around it. But I ponder the reasons behind it. And in this case, I do have to wonder, though, if there are certain time frames in the original trilogy points, especially because we had so many of the comics out there, the Marvel comics, the news strip comics and stuff like that, that chronicled a lot of stuff going on that most of us readers don't know about because there haven't been reprints or reissues, things like that. They've become so obscure that it's almost lost to fandom, if you will. And it makes me wonder that because it gets lost, it becomes now open for us to just continue to rewrite over. And at some point, you know, are we going too far? I mean, is there a point where you have to cut the line and say, no, we really shouldn't do this story here with Luke. Maybe we should pick a different character. You know, I mean, is there a time where they should say, you know, we're not going to go there? I mean, same thing with the Clone Wars. We've got Anakin and Dooku bumping into each other. And like Nathan said, with the certain comments, you know, we now have the Lando and Han one. I actually think with the Scoundrel story, we actually might have some pretty good potential here to add some depth. But, you know, I worry about, like, the AT-AT story Zahn did. You know, that one, it just seems kind of pointless. I don't think that Scoundrels will be a pointless story, but there is wiggle room there for someone who wants to argue to say that it's a pointless story in the regards of Han's not going to get the money and it's going to end with him still owing money. But that doesn't mean that the whole story is going to factor around that. And I got to keep that in my mind when I go into it. So I look at Scoundrels as I'm an Ocean's 11 fan. I'm a Han Solo fan. And I'm hoping they can do something with this, like maybe something like the Fast Five did or something along those lines where, you know, we get a good caper type story where we see a robbery go down and somehow it ends up catastrophically going wrong. You know, I don't know. There's some opportunity there, but it's definitely something that has been prevalent on my mind. I think about it quite a bit, especially when new stories come out. At first, there's the pessimistic side of me going, really, again, we're going to cram another story in here? Do we really need it? But at the same time, there is a fan demand for these stories. There's a lot of people that really enjoy Luke, Han, and Leia at that time frame. You know, I've said in the past, I'm not really a big fan of that time frame anymore, because for me, that ship has sailed. I've read most of those stories. I'm more interested in characters of Luke and Han and them in, say, Apocalypse. Right now, I'm about halfway through that, and I'm loving it. That, to me, is my quintessential big three. I have followed up to that point. So when I go back, it's not as exciting for me. It's still good stories, but it's just not as exciting, if that makes any sense.
You know, with regard to Scoundrels, I mean, I've not been a big fan of Zahn's more recent stuff since the jump to Del Rey. I love the Thrawn trilogy, really liked Hand of Thrawn, but the stuff he's put out, you know, Survivor's Quest, Outbound Flight, Allegiance, Choices of One, I've really not been able to get into that much, partly because of the whole his characters become superheroes, everybody else is inept kind of thing that seems to have been really prevalent in Choices of One. But this one gives me a lot of hope, because he's really good at sort of the adventurous fun with the Star Wars film characters, as he did in the Thrawn trilogy, and I think that the idea of just doing a caper story could be very interesting. I just hope that it doesn't clash too much with other things. But that's sort of the same type of deal we're dealing with here, which is this whole time period between Episode 4 and Episode 5, between A New Hope and The Empire Strikes Back, it's really, really crammed full. And part of the big deal of that, of course, is that, yes, it's crammed full, but at least in this era, they kind of have an excuse, because for a while there wasn't a unified continuity. Until 1991, there was no expanded universe, official continuity concept out there that would tie all these media together. Instead, you had all these different publishing arms producing different stories that weren't necessarily meant to link together. You had Del Rey doing the early books. So you've got, shortly after A New Hope, you have Splinter of the Mind's Eye. You've got Marvel producing comics, 107 issues, a 4-issue Jedi miniseries, and 3 annuals. You've got the comic strips by Russ Manning and then Archie Goodwin. But they weren't really designed to all link together very well. So what you wind up with is some of the same ground being tread over, but it was because they didn't realize that they were treading over something that they had to essentially believe was true from some other source. They actually do a really good article on this recently. In Star Wars Insider number 132, it's the one with the Darth Maul and Savage Opress cover where Savage's head is intact, so it must be an old picture because none of his horns are chopped off, and it amusingly shows Darth Maul, but there's a banner that says Darth Maul Returns going across his waist, and you see nothing below his waist, which is kind of the way Obi-Wan left him after The Phantom Menace. But there's an article called Star Wars Expanding Empire, How the Empire Strikes Back Rocks the EU, and it's written by Ryder Windham, who's one of the big Star Wars authors. He does a lot of the younger reader books. I mean, he's been around for ages in terms of Star Wars writing.
Great, great writer. I mean, yeah. If you haven't read his stuff, give it a shot. He actually makes a lot of what people would assume to be children books more adult.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Especially stuff like Clone Wars Secret Missions. He's actually on Facebook, anytime that something pops up that looks like it's going to be some kind of collectible thing I might want to pick up, especially when I was still looking for the newspaper strips, anytime he'd see those on eBay, he'd shoot me a message saying, hey, it's over here. You know, this may be a chance to get it.
Awesome.
Really cool guy. But just kind of looking at that article, they outright acknowledge that same type of thing. Well, because there were different publishing arms, there wasn't a unified continuity at the time. You know, for example, Han says, the bounty hunter we ran into on Ord Mantell changed my mind. And it goes into, well, we see that story in the Marvel series, in Mortal Kombat. We see that story in Scoundrel's Luck from West End Games. We see that story in Rebel Mission to Ord Mantell by Brian Daley, the audio drama. And we see it in the comic strip, which is probably the best known one, with Score in the bounty hunter of Ord Mantell. I mean, that's all kinds of different publishing arms coming at it from different directions in that case. So I guess it's somewhat forgivable, but from a continuity standpoint, it makes it kind of a pain to look back on. It's sort of like we joke on Republic Forces Radio Network all the time with the Clone Wars, where there's the, my powers have doubled since the last time we met, Count. And they've met over and over again in the Clone Wars. So it's like saying, yeah, my powers have doubled since last Tuesday, you know? But, you know, it's fun to see different authors interpreting the same idea. It's just that from a continuity standpoint, now you would think it'd be a much more cohesive thing. They'd have much more set rules for the issues.
Well, and it also creates the retcon issue, like the Rebel plans for the Death Star. I mean, how many of those that we had? And it got to be a point where people were really like, oh, come on, another one? And I can't remember which story it was, but there was one of the stories. It could even been the book Death Star, where they explained that there were multiple versions of the plans out there, and some were decoys, some were not. So that way, if the Emperor found one of the agents, they were able to get it out in multiple range. And then there was like another one where one of them had one part of it, another one had another part of it, another one had another part of it, and they all had to come together. I mean, it was really convoluted, but I think that by making it so convoluted in that sense, they were able to get around the fact that they had all these contradictory stories. And then it was like, well, we hit them so hard from so many different ways, we were able to get the information. And so you have opportunities like that that can arise here.
Well, that begs the question, though. I mean, you take the whole issue of, say, the Death Star plans, and you've got Interlude at Darknell, you've got, I think it's called Jedi Dawn, I think is what it was called. My brain may be fuzzing on me. The UK Choose Your Own Adventure books that were never released in the United States. Bounty Hunter, I think it was Jedi Dawn. And then you've got stuff like the Dark Forces video game, the Death Star novel deals with it. I mean, there's a hint that it might even be somewhat what's being dealt with in Shadow Games, but they don't outright say anything specific about
that
it.
That was what I was thinking, too. And it's funny you mentioned a hint. I thought that's what they were going with, but
Well, they mentioned the whole dummy courier thing. I mean, so it could very well have been. It seems like it fit very well into that whole, well, there's something important being moved around. But that's, you know,
yeah.
That whole issue, or at least a lot of that issue, though, what gets me about the Death Star plans thing is the same thing that gets me about a lot of the how does Han get the money to pay back Jabba stuff, or something as straightforward and contradictory, but not in terms of tons of sources. Something as contradictory as, say, the way they handled Darth Bane, Path of Destruction, and the Jedi vs. Sith comic series, which is that a lot of this stuff is not being produced back in the day when there wasn't a cohesive whole that was supposed to be there. A lot of this stuff, especially on the Death Star plans angle, is being produced in a time period where there is supposed to be a unified whole. There is supposed to be continuity being kept. And granted, you don't want to tell an author, sorry, you can't be creative in this way or this other way. But you would think that it would be something along the lines of, if a story's already been told about something that maybe explains something from the films or whatever, if something's already been told, you don't allow someone to tell it again. Or, if you have multiple teams telling the same story in projects around the same time, require them to have some kind of central clearinghouse to make sure that that information fits between all these different sources. And yet, you got all these different Find the Death Star plan stories, and as much as we want to say, you know, it's cool to see authors' interpretations, and, you know, everybody just wants to write those stories and explain those things, there's only so many times you can do that until it becomes a convoluted mess. It makes me wonder, why would they not keep a tighter rein on that in the time since 1991 when they have this official continuity concept and supposedly are trying to make it all fit? It seems like it's these issues that are the one place, especially between the classic trilogy films, it's the one place or the one pair of places where that attention to continuity detail sometimes seems like it goes out the window, and I'm not quite sure why that would be the case.
Yeah, you know, I think about the Jedi versus Sith, and when Drew Karpyshyn hit that scene, and we had, Farfalla? You know, he was a character that should have had, like, goat-like legs. You know, that's how he was depicted in the comic. But Karpyshyn never actually touched on it, and I love the fact that he just left it avoid. He didn't reference it one way or the other. So you could say, well, he doesn't have goat legs. But at the same side, you could say, well, it doesn't say he doesn't have goat legs. And, you know, it's like, so there are examples of when it can work. I get leery, though, anytime they do it in, like you said, the classic trilogy spot. You know, and I think about how episode 3 goes to episode 4 and Lucas has kept that so off limits. That's a zone, too, that as long as George is going to be playing and there's a chance that it can shift again underneath EU authors' feet, I say the EU authors need to leave it alone. Treat it like Invasion. You know, how the Dark Horse, they didn't come near the New Jedi Order till the series was over and it was dust was settling. Then they came back to tell their comic version of the story.
Yeah, but you know, I gotta wonder if part of that, though, was kind of a frustration. Because remember, New Jedi Order wasn't supposed to be something that was in novel form. It's originally approached as a Dark Horse comic event, and they decided instead to go with it for novels. So I wonder if part of that was a, oh, wow, you took this off in a different direction. There was a lot of talk of that around the time it was out. But from the standpoint of, for instance, Path of Destruction and Jedi vs. Sith, that was actually one of my first blogs on what became my StarWars.com VIP blog, whenever they had the StarWars.com blogs up that they're either taken down or about to take down.
Yeah, any day, I believe, like next 10 or so.
Yeah, I wound up breaking down how does Path of Destruction meet Jedi vs. Sith. For instance, Path of Destruction pages 274 to 277 are the same as Jedi vs. Sith pages 3 through 5 of book number 2. But in that thing, I'm having to put in things like, well, the parallels between these pages are only partial. This character enters, this character doesn't. Derivit barely appears in Path of Destruction. Heck, Xana only appears really at the very end, as I recall, of Path of Destruction. Yeah. So it's, but that's one of those things where it's not like there was much for them to not have to conflict. I mean, there was only one source to worry about, and yet there were conflictions with that source. And certainly it was something that had to have been where they knew the source existed, because otherwise there wouldn't be so many direct parallels. And yet, parts of it were purposely ignored. And we were told, well, just, you know, kind of go with the Path of Destruction as the more recent, more adult version of it. And it's kind of like, why do we have to, you know? But
you almost wonder if that's a format thing, because you hear a lot of times, well, it was in the comic. And I even do this, like the Digest comics for the Clone Wars. They just were so goofy drawn sometimes that I kind of didn't take them as serious as, say, the Dark Horse regular runs. And then, you know, then the books I took a little more serious. And you have to wonder if, like, that plays into it, too, in people's minds. That, oh, well, it was just in a comic. And the comic's just not as serious as the books.
That's true. I always used to say with the video games, for instance, I think the phrase I used on Chrono Radio for years was, you have to make it pliable to make it playable. You know, you have to be able to sort of twist things around a little bit to make it work as a video game. But
yeah,
I think
kind of forget the game mechanics, if you will.
Right. I think this whole issue, though, of cramming one era, there are ways that you can do it that's done well. It's just that they have to actually be very meticulous in the planning of it. For instance, there was no meticulous planning between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. And not really between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. So you got this massive mess of tons of things. As I'm fond of saying, the characters generally don't have time to take a leak between episodes 4 and 5. They must have, you know, space depends on or something. But then again, you take an example like the Clone Wars. And yeah, it's a continuity mess kind of now because of the cartoon series. But that's one of those instances where Lucas is coming in and changing something by creating something that's in his own vision. Kind of like the original dates for the Clone Wars that were given to Zahn for Dark Force Rising. And then Lucas comes in and changes when he intends for it to take place. Or the dates for when Vader slash Anakin was born. And then he changes that as he goes into the Phantom Menace. That's a Lucas changing things kind of thing. Of course, that's going to shake things up. But they did a really good job between, I guess, what, 2005 and 2008-ish, maybe 2009, when they were doing the publishing between episode 2 and episode 3. I mean, they had that laid out month to month, even in some cases week by week. And it's like, okay, this book, this is where he's going to face the Jedi trials that are going to be what make him promoted. This comic, this is where he's going to get his scar from Ventress. And they really laid it out in great detail between all different mediums, between the video games and the comics and the novels. Really, the only thing that wasn't fit within there was the Genndy Tartakovsky micro series, it is called, and the Clone Wars Adventures spinoff digest from that. But everything else, very well done. They can do it. And when they do it well, it is fabulous. It's just that it seems like with some of these crammed eras, it's almost like they've given up on trying to make it all fit. And I'm hoping that that's not what's going to happen with the Clone Wars going forward. They may just give up and just say, well, it's all just different points of view, which is the big cop-out, of course. You know, we can always say, well, different points of view, looking back through history, different historians look at things different ways, therefore they're all valid windows into the saga, I think, as Chris Sarassi at one point said.
See, the term giving up, to me, it resonates with, I almost say, the corporate line. You know, George doesn't get caught up on continuity, and it seems like the corporate standpoint is everybody working in Star Wars shouldn't get caught up on continuity. But I think for fans out there like you and me, there's got to be somebody like Leland Chee out there that is concerned about it and trying to find it to work. If you don't, I think you're going to have a group of fans out there that are going to be in complete panic. I mean, whether it's good or bad. But I don't know. It's one of those things where it definitely feels like it's the corporate line of don't worry about it, we'll make it work later, whether or not it will or won't. And yeah, for the most part, it's always worked. But there's a part of me that goes, well, what about when it doesn't? You know, it doesn't seem like a winning formula. But, you know, I think about the timeline is so big. And yet when it comes down to this classic era, that's the one spot that I'm really the most, for a lack of a better word, irked with. I mean, when that one comes, you know, like, I'm trying to stay optimistic with Scoundrels. I'm really looking forward to this book. But the timing of the book, I'm not so happy with. Shadow Games, I wasn't too happy with the timing. It felt like it could fall in two different eras the way it was written. And I'm not exactly 100% sure that where it was set was the better place for it. But I think about, like, Mara Jade. And I like the fact that we go back and we have these stories that tell some of her past. I would like to see the same thing with Anakin and Jason Solo. I mean, just because they're dead doesn't mean that their live stories have been told. And I would look forward to those going back. So in that regards, I do see merit in why they do these type of stories. I mean, there is that want, that desire for the adventures. But again, I get back to why are we locked down in this 5-year gap? It seems like everything under the sun is falling into this 5 years. There have got to be other points in these big threes timelines that are just as interesting, and we can come up with really cool, viable stories. I mean, so I'm on the fence both ways with it. I mean, on one hand, I can see the advantages, and on the other hand, I see all these disadvantages. So, you know, I don't know. It's the crux of being a Star Wars fan. I mean, am I thinking about it too much? Probably so, but it's what I enjoy.
At least you don't have to try to make it fit for the timeline. Gold, good lord.
Yeah. You guys, timeliners, man, I feel bad for you guys when things get ugly, because I've watched from the official sites, you guys, you had a thread that would, you would sit there and see you guys, oh, no, how are we going to fit this in? You guys would be trying to get Leland to give you official statements, and then things with Wikipedia would come up. I was like, oh, man, the headache involved with that. I had to just finally let go of the dating and just try to focus on my bookshelf. As close as I get dating, it's like, does this book fall before that book?
Yeah, and you know, I think, you know, the key here is, it's the same thing we're going to talk about later on in another episode of the show, which is that, you know, there's a question of just how viable Star Wars can be to brand new fans who haven't come in reading novels before, who've only seen the films. You know, how viable is it as a franchise if you got books out there, you know, starring Jason and Jaina Solo, or books out there set, you know, 1,000 years or 2,000 or however many years before the events of the films. You know, the touchstone for a lot of people are the film characters, of course. And, you know, if you're going to make movies about the film characters that resonate with that brand new classic trilogy only or prequel trilogy only audience, you're kind of stuck. You almost have to make it sometime relatively around the films, otherwise you lose that gateway for all these new readers. But it has certainly lent itself to a very, very crammed time period. But I gotta wonder, though, you know, when we look at it, there's other cases, and we're gonna deal with this in our next episode, talking about the different times that the Sith returned and there were these different battles between the Jedi and the Sith. But there have been times where they've been willing to branch away very, very far from the films, whether it's Tales of the Jedi, Knights of the Old Republic, The Old Republic, Legacy. They can branch out pretty far. But it
seems,
Dawn
of the Jedi.
Yeah, Dawn of the Jedi especially. But it seems that a lot of times when they do that, and they enter an entirely new era, one, of course, there's no obvious connections, except maybe in the case of Legacy, between the film characters and those other characters. But also, you sort of run the risk of creating a whole new, I think we've called it before, micro-sagas within the setting, when we did our saga versus setting episode a while back. And I gotta wonder, which should they be doing? I mean, from the standpoint of being publishers, and this, I guess, is sort of hinting at what we're going to see in a future episode with us, but you know, is it that they are producing books that take place within these crammed time frames, and in doing so, missing the opportunity to make books in other time periods, or is it that doing books in other time periods, they're missing the mark on capturing these characters as they existed in the films for other readers? I mean, maybe we're not the readers they're aiming these types of books at.
Well, I would say you're right on that regards. I mean, obviously, you know, in this case, the side of me that's not as excited is not what's being aimed at. But you bring up a point that I was going to bring up as well, that there is opportunity here for them to go back and do what they're doing with this small group and explore it more. New Jedi Order, I have always said that it is a series, and yet it has always been treated like an era. And it wasn't until Invasion came out that we really got an addition to the era. We had a practical man. I believe the Boba Fett story was a practical man. That was about the only thing that came out after the series was finished. And yet, we'd have nothing going on in that era. I mean, it's just that one series, and it's treated like that's it. They could easily go in, and you know, I've mentioned this also as Tales. You know, we should do Tales of books, and we can have a Tales of the New Jedi Order and things like that. And they could easily go in and do the same thing that they're doing with the big three characters with, say, Worra Skitter, Kip Duran. We've got Ganna Risso. We got Karan Horn. I mean, Karan even takes a leave of absence in the middle of New Jedi Order. We have a slight reference to him coming back, I believe, in Star by Star, but what happened with him? I mean, there are plenty of opportunities out there for them to do the same kind of cramming or mining, if you will. And that's the thing. It's like, I think with the big three, I look at it more as a cramming, but yet if it was some character that they haven't done it, I would look at it as mining. We're getting new, rich materials. But I don't look at it the same because it seems like it's always the big three. And yeah, I can get where you're coming at. Well, it's not aimed at me. We're trying to get new readers in here. But I, as a member of fandom for over 10 years, the big problem I have with Lucasfilms, Del Rey, and all that is that it seems like there is a feeling of older fans don't count, that their opinions don't necessarily matter. It's more about, we got to get the new blood in here. Everything is on the new blood, and these fans are going to die out sooner or later. They're going to get sick of Star Wars and they're going to leave. So let's not even bother with trying to keep them happy, and we'll only just focus on the new blood, and we'll just ride that new blood. I mean, granted, that's not exactly the case, but from a forum standpoint, from something I have viewed in the last 10 years, a lot of EU fans especially have felt that way, that as things go, it doesn't matter what happens in the EUs because it's only about what happened in those movies, and whatever's going to happen now, if it gets people more interested in the movies or getting them branched into the books through the movies, well, we're going to focus on that and that alone. And I do at times feel like there is a whole other side of this that is just completely ignored, and there's a lot of potential there. You know, and I've mentioned the Anakin Solo and the Jason Solo past books. We see it with Mara Jade, but I'm surprised we have not got a book telling more of their past when they were younger, or even just a couple throwaway tales.
You know, see, I sort of agree with you and sort of don't on that one, because I think you're right. There is a lot of a push towards, you know, we want to bring in new readers. You almost have to. You know, you got to keep the publishing line going.
Yeah.
So, of course, there's a lot of focus on film characters and such. And certainly with the Clone Wars, I think that the emphasis is heavily on get into the cartoon, get into the marketing, buy the toys, but not the EU stuff. I mean, heck, they've ended all but the Clone Wars Digest series when it comes to expanded universe publishing for Clone Wars tie-ins, except for like the little kids adaptations books. And I guess we've got Clone Wars Adventures, the MMO, still out there, but that's only sort of vaguely EU-style anyway, because there's not a lot of story to that MMO. But at the same time,
I was actually bummed when they canceled the Secret Invasions. I don't even know if that was canceled. I don't know if it was planned at 4, but it seemed to come out of nowhere for me. It was like, really? 4? That's it? There's no more?
But it's done well. Secret Missions number 4, it took a year for the fourth book to finally arrive, but it really does wrap it up very well. But at the same time, you know, at the same time that we can say that, well, you know, it's more focused on the people who are watching the TV show and the movies rather than the longtime EU people, I'm not sure that's entirely true, because you would not have a series like Legacy. You wouldn't have a series like Dawn of the Jedi if it wasn't playing into those types of groups. You know, I can't imagine someone... True. I mean, maybe you'll have people who just watch the films pick up Dawn of the Jedi thinking, hey, Origin of the Jedi, this is cool. I think that plays much more into the people who have been longtime EU fans, heard about Tython, heard about the origins of the Jedi, the Force War and all that, and now are getting into reading that. Certainly, you had to have been a reader in a sense of New Jedi Order, and know a little bit about Mara Jade and Luke Skywalker being married and all this kind of stuff before you can really get into Legacy. So, I mean, there certainly are times where they are really playing up to the EU fans, but that's the times where I think it's very risky in terms of publishing, again, as we'll see on that future show. But you mentioned the idea of why not cram the time periods not with the same old characters. They've done this to a degree. There was this old, beautiful, beautiful thing in Star Wars that some of you out there hopefully will remember. It was published by West End Games from 1994 to 1997, 15 issues, though kind of expensive for each one. It was called The Official Star Wars Adventure Journal. And it was a thing of beauty.
I only have
one. It took me a while to finally get the entire set. I had to get a few of them off of eBay because they were coming out when I was still in high school, and I just did not have the money to buy them every time that they came out. But I wound up finally getting a full set of these things, and it was great. It had role-playing game material that was in it, and so there's like these role-playing scenarios or these miniature scenarios from the old West End Games miniature stuff, not from any of the newer stuff. This is way before Wizards of the Coast ever had it, and of course now they've lost it too. I guess it's Fantasy Flight Games that's going to have it now. But you also had a bunch of short stories. In fact, if you've ever read Tales from the Empire, those are all stories out of the Adventure Journal. If you've ever read Tales from the New Republic, all the stories out of Tales from the New Republic are either from the Adventure Journal or they were meant to be in the Adventure Journal past issue 15, because issue 15 was the last one before it got canceled. I mean, this was great stuff. And what you would have, sometimes you'd have the actual authors of the adult novels come in. Like, you had Barbara Hambly come in and write a story. Timothy Zahn and Michael Stackpole shared a story at one point. And it's kind of cool stuff in there. That's actually Side Trip, I think, from Tales from the Empire. But you also had these ongoing tales, like Tinian Eyat, for instance, Alex Winger. These are names that mean nothing to mainstream EU fans, but if you read the Adventure Journal, these were big-time characters, because what they would do is that in, say, issue number one, you'd have a short story, and then issue number three, you'd have another short story with the same characters continuing on from the previous one, and then maybe there's not another one until issue number 10. It's these serialized tales where you can enjoy each one individually. But together, they make a broader story, and they're not the film characters. I think the only time that the Alex Winger stories, I think it was, maybe it's the Tinian, but I think it's the Alex Winger stories, really connect is in a story where she meets Luke Skywalker. And broadly speaking, what you've got is a ton of stories that are EU stories about new characters, fun situations, but here's the thing. The vast majority of them were set during the classic trilogy. But you never would have known it except for little references like, we just heard about the destruction of Alderaan. Or, ever since Alderaan, this has happened. There's this whole broad, just huge canvas out there that there's so much great potential for. I mean, think about this. Imagine a story set immediately after A New Hope. None of the film characters. The characters are, for instance, perhaps a resistance group on some backwater world that's against the Empire, but they are so small and just growing that they have no active contact yet with the Rebel Alliance. They haven't been picked up by a Rebel cell and turned into part of the broader organization. Now, they're dealing with the fallout from the destruction of the Death Star and the crackdowns on any anti-Imperial groups, but they don't have the resources of the Rebellion. Don't have any former Jedi in hiding type characters. Maybe you can have the Hand of Judgment jump in if you want to have, you know, Zahn write it, because eventually he'll use some of his own characters anyway. But do something in that era. There's so much potential. The saga as a setting, or even as a saga, is amazing. You know, it's the broadest, one of the most open sci-fi sagas ever to exist. There's all kinds of potential. They just have to grab it and use it. So I'm not sure. I think I'm right there with your distinction, that when it's the same old characters, the same old people, in the same old scenarios, yes, it feels like cramming. But you know what? Give me more classic trilogy era stories. Give me more stories in those eras that we say are crammed for the main characters, because if you use other characters, side characters, it will be awesome. That's why I like Shadow Games, with the exception of having to shoehorn Han into that story and have it wind up messing up a little bit about how in Rebel Dawn he's like, hey, Dash, long time no see, which apparently now must be sarcastic.
Oh, I like it when it works like that, though. I mean, at least we could say it was sarcastic. It could have been something a heck of a lot worse.
This is true. But you take something like a Shadow Games or a Death Troopers or even Agent of the Empire, leave out the main characters, focus on these other characters, and it can be something great. It doesn't always work. I'm not at all a fan of Dark Times. But some of the other storylines that have been out there that were in, say, the pages of Empire, you know, that was kind of a hit-or-miss series. But broadly speaking, you wind up with the potential for great stories unencumbered by all the different stuff that's come before for these established characters because you're leaving them alone.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and you brought up the role-playing game materials, and I have a lot of these. I don't role-play. The reason why I got them was because of the story. You know, there were references to a lot of things going on that you had never heard of before. And that was what really appealed to me, because when you read a book by Stackpole or by Zahn or Alston, you had a feeling when you'd go back and grab these RPGs that they'd studied the living out of them. It's like, whoa, the details that they were picking up out of these. And you had a sense that, okay, these guys obviously were role-playing gamers at one point. At least that's how it felt, because there was so much. It was almost like each one was a mini encyclopedia about a certain aspect of Star Wars. And so, you know, I got a whole bunch of them. I stopped getting them because as Lucas got more involved again with Star Wars, certain things would just drop out, or, well, that didn't happen, this didn't happen, here or there. And the role-playing game material was kind of the first thing to hit to become infinities in a sense. But there was a lot of stuff going on, and there is a lot of stuff. Like, I want to say, like, Kyle Katarn is one, or Katarn. Am I saying it wrong? I'm probably saying it wrong.
Katarn.
And so he had a lot of stuff going on that I didn't even know about until I started reading the RPG stuff. I was like, whoa, there's a lot here to this character, a whole, you know, wealth of backstory that has just kind of been sitting on the shelf. And I you know, there is the side of me that is like, grab this stuff, use it, you know, go back to these eras and flush them out more. But I do feel that there is a line that needs to be set. One, don't get an author that can't do his homework to do it, because that's just going to insult a lot of people, whether intentional or not. These people that are getting insulted are still buying your products. Some of them, like myself, will buy it regardless of whether it's good or bad, but there is a small percentage out there that gets snubbed and they're like, I'm done. To me, I hate watching people that I consider friends in the Star Wars community leave because they don't like how a book just shattered an expectation of one's form or another. It's never fun to see that when it's something that could have been avoided just by a little extra research. And that's what I think is rule number two. Do the research. If you're going to be doing something in an era that has got 12 ways from Sunday that Luke, you know, is getting from here to there to point B to point C and point 5 to point L to Z again, and if you don't know what in the heck we're talking about, well, then maybe this isn't the story of Luke that you should be writing. You know, I think that's the thing, is like, you should pick and choose your battles when it comes to telling a tale in the EU. And if it's a character that a lot of people know and love, and the character's been from hill to dale and back again, maybe this isn't the story that you need to tell. Maybe there's another way you can tell the same story with different characters. I think in a lot of regards that will make a lot more fans happy. Shadow Games. I will use that as an example again. I loved the story. I mean, oh, I say loved. I liked the story. It was good. I loved it as a Dash Rendar story. Han worked for me. I think that they could have used another character that would have worked just as well, maybe even better for some fans. Some fans may have enjoyed Han not being there at all. But then there is a contingent of fans that were excited to see Han. I actually enjoyed the interactions between Han and Dash. I found that the way that they incorporated Han and the Falcon in the story for Dash and Lebo's characters especially, I found that a profound revelation. The fact that Lebo has the schematics for the Falcon and was able to, you know, pilot the ship even, that was really cool stuff for me. So there are some rays of light in the midst of what some people might consider a doom and gloom scenario with these stories, but I think it can be done well. I think we have examples of it in the past, and I think that, you know, if we watch where we're going with these, we can do it again.
That's right. You know, we don't need Galactic Battlegrounds, Battlefront, Battlefront 2, Renegade Squadron, Elite Squadron, Therefore I Am, or I guess Therefore I Am only mentions it, Doom Mission, Race for Survival, Imperial Spy, etc., etc. We don't need all those sources, and yes, I did just look that up on Wikipedia. We don't need that many sources telling us how Yavin was evacuated, especially if they're going to contradict. We don't need four or five different sources telling us how the Rebels got to Hoth and how they knew about Hoth in the first place. But consider these cautionary tales. As much as we as fans harp on these places where it is very crammed and where there are very contradictory versions of stories being told, they're the exception that proves the rule. And the rule, of course, is that most of the time, the Star Wars saga, as it expands in a way that interconnects in a way that most sci-fi sagas, at least in publishing, never try to do, and it gives us that saga, or setting, based on last episode, that really is a great canvas in which hopefully we'll see a lot more stories. So I don't want to make it sound like, you know, we're harping on the bad parts. It's just, you know, this is one of those issues that if you're a Star Wars fan, you've been reading the EU for a long time, or if you're trying to get into it brand new, you're going to run into from time to time. You just kind of have to roll with the punches and make the best of what is given and hope that in the future they'll be a little more careful, like with Scoundrels.
Boba Fett. I mean, I always think of Boba Fett. If they can take all the different pasts that he has had in written form and find a way to make it make sense with what has happened throughout the years with the different versions of his backstory and make it where it almost all works, I think that there's faith out there. You know, like Nathan said, try not to see it as us harping, more like we're trying to draw light, bring attention. That's kind of what we're doing here with the show. We're trying to take a topic and really kind of explore it. You know, yeah, there will probably be some negativity, but you can't have a light side without a dark side, my friends. And with that, I believe that's about going to wrap up our show, unless, Nathan, you had any other last-minute thoughts?
No, other than the fact that we've joked around a little bit around here that when Han says, Boba Fett, where? Somebody, if looking at his past, would then be like, hang on, let me pull out my flow chart. Just saying. but I think this is good. I think this has been a nice discussion. And, of course, next time we'll be taking a look at that whole issue of repeating cycles of Jedi versus Sith, which somewhat plays into this when they're not trying to cram into the same era. So this should be a pretty interesting month.
That's right. That's kind of why we lined them up the way we did. And now, for those of you out there wondering who sponsors our show, well, it could be you. That's right. We're always looking for sponsorships. So, you know, if you want to, be sure to contact us. And you can contact us on our show at StarWarsReport.com, as well as iTunes, Zune, and Middle Earth Network Radio. We have Facebook. You can send us an email. You can email us at BeyondTheFilms@StarWarsFanWorks.com and interact with us on Facebook. You know, that's our major form of communicating with the fans is Facebook. I don't always get into the Twitter account, so you can probably be tweeting at me and I may not be responding back. Nathan's a little better at that than I, but you can find us at SW Beyond Films, no the, and that's now for both accounts. And be sure to let us know what you think of the show. You know, if there's a topic you want to hear, throw it out there. We are always writing them down. You might not hear it next week's show, but maybe next month or the month after that. We're always looking for stuff and we're always interacting with our fans. So once again, thanks for listening and may the Force be with you. And don't quote us the odds. For Star Wars Beyond the Films, this is Mark Herleman
and Nathan Butler.
And we will catch you next time.